can you predict osteoporosis?
Yeah.
Or can you... Oh, okay. Hi, I'm Alex, and welcome to the X-Health Show, where I talk to visionaries behind the latest innovations in healthcare for the extra health of the future. We're in the industrial zone of Blaon-le-Watt, on the outskirts of Geneva, Switzerland, strong in biotech companies and startups. Professor Didier Hans is the CEO of Medimaps, a medical physicist with over 25 years of experience in dual energy X-ray bone architectural ultrasound imaging techniques. He can talk hours about osteoporosis and bone and body composition. Medimaps is a Swiss scale-up that developed DBS Insight software that in 3 seconds adds trabecular bone score, hence DBS, to the regular DEXA bone screening and helps detect additional 30% of patients at osteoporotic fracture risk. You'll hear about what is osteoporosis and how to diagnose it, till what age we build our bone mass, how to predict osteoporotic fracture risk years before it happens, to buy your time and prevent it. Didier, so first I want to ask you, like, how come people may die actually from osteoporosis, but they don't really care about it, or like they don't treat it seriously?
Well, it's kind of a tricky question. They don't die of osteoporosis, so to speak, but the consequence of osteoporosis. So it's osteoporosis, a silence disease. Okay. It's a silence disease that will be an impact. A decrease is characterized as a decrease in density and a bone mass, and degradation of microarchitecture leading to an unacceptable risk of fracture and eventually to the fracture.
So you just gave the definition of osteoporosis.
Yeah, that's the definition. So meaning that at one point you go, your bone will degrade one way from the density or the structure. It doesn't really matter. It's just degrading. And then at one point it will break. Now, obviously, if you break your finger, well, that's fine. But when you start to be in a old ladies or whatever, or even like mid-age, having a vertebral fracture or hip fracture or humerus fracture can be quite an handicap.
I'm just thinking, you know, because I already spoke about a silent disease already on the show with Joseph Sola. Uh-huh. And we spoke about blood pressure, high blood pressure, which is also something people ignore because it's like you kind of don't feel it. You know?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when you lose the density of the bone or degradation of the microstructure, obviously, you cannot feel it. It's not like, you know, wow, I can see my bone just melting in a bath, you know, in hot water. No, it doesn't work that way. It's really like over a lifespan or acceleration due to other causes that we can come back on that. The problem is when you get the fracture, it's already too late. That means you get it. And who will really care on a daily basis, oh, I don't feel any symptoms. And when you will feel it, it's already too late. We have so many things in life to think about it that it's go really in the back of our mind, except when start to be close to a potential event, we start to freak out and realize, oh, I should have done something because there are a lot of things to be done before it's happened.
So what does the moment look like when there is actually the bone is broken? And what can you see? What's the in the bone, basically? What's the messed up, basically?
Oh, so when the bone is breaking, it's like, just imagine the Eiffel Tower, for example. The Eiffel Tower is like is a metal, and you have a lot of crossover piece of metal and stuff like that. So imagine that you're removing, so the internal piece of metal, such as like a crossover and stuff like that, is like what we call the trabecular bone. It will be the trabecular that holds the bone, so to speak. So it's a mix of cortical and trabecular bone that will create the whole bone to some extent. So removing one will be that you transform the density of the bone, meaning, for example, Eiffel Tower, from metal to wood. Hmm. So that will be a bit more fragile, but still can be okay. Now, the microstructure with the trabecular bone is all the little piece. So if you remove one after the other, then you start to have a weak piece, and that will collapse. That will be a fracture to some extent in a case of osteoporosis.
Why can that happen? Do we know, like, the reasons for osteoporosis?
Yeah, well, there is the difficulty of osteoporosis is a multifactorial. But the concept of osteoporosis, so to speak, is like an aging process. So with age, we're going to increase your bone mass from birth to what we call the peak bone mass, meaning around 20 to 30 years old. You will build your bone in such a way that you will capitalize on your bone and have a strong bone. But starting at the age of 30, 35 or 40, you stop building bone. You will maintain the bone theoretically, where you have osteoclast and osteoblast. That is like remodeling, destroying, remodeling, just renewing your bone constantly. The problem maybe is with age, and that's accelerated around the menopause, for example, for women, or even for men, but is a slightly different manner. You will have imbalance between forming and deforming or destructing, destruction of the bone, which at the end, the balance is negative. And instead of to maintain your bone, you start to decline the quality of your bone, overly speaking, over the age, till you reach a certain point where the bone is becoming fragile. So the highest bone quality you have at the beginning, as a normal process, it will decline with age. That's what we call primary osteoporosis, for example. Secondary osteoporosis will be an acceleration of that unbalanced osteoblast, osteoclast that's creating the balance of the bone, will accelerate that unbalance by external factors, such as either a disease that can really have an impact, or it could be a lifestyle such as cigarettes or alcohol. Excess of alcohol will be damageable for the bone as well. Or it could be another medical treatment that could be good for the disease, but not for the bone. For example, if you have a breast cancer with anti-aromatase, it's good to heal the cancer, but it will have detrimental effect on the bone. So that means it will accelerate the bone loss and then accelerate your risk to fracture and then not to recover. The same with if you have asthma, if you take a glucocorticoid, stuff like that. So glucocortisone, the cortisone, generally speaking, may be somehow good for certain things, but be detrimental to the bone. So all the external condition which is not related to the normal process of aging are called secondary osteoporosis, and that accelerating the process.
So the primary is basically the one that is somehow connected to aging,
age-related,
like the natural
exactly.
aging. Can we do anything about it? Or is it like, because it's not that everyone also has osteoporosis, or does it? Or
no, as of today, if we take the global statistic worldwide, we'll have one woman out of two. So almost 50% of the women after menopause will end up with an osteoporotic fracture.
That's because of the changes in hormones.
Because of hormone, it's an acceleration. And that will be one man out of five or two men out of five will also have osteoporosis. So less that woman, but still have some issue here. Now, maybe if we can do something, that's another question. But obviously, even with a normal process of age, we can do something. Because even in a normal lifespan, you can have a normal bone loss as an aging process, or you can have what we call fast loser or slow loser, meaning that the environment or the lifestyle or habit can impact also the way you lose or you gain, or you slow down the loss of bone naturally.
Can we go just one step back? Because you mentioned bone mass. What's this?
The bone mass will be characterized, let's put a different name beside the bone mass, will be the bone density, the density of the bone. Okay, I will differentiate the two aspects, the density of the bone and the microstructure of the bone. And if you take both of them, that will represent a large portion of what we call the overall bone quality. Then you will add some other factors like the bone remodeling activity, degree of mineralization, collagen quality and stuff like that. But those two, the bone mass or bone density and microstructure, represent the major two pillars of the overall bone quality.
We'll be right back. This episode is brought to you by The Exhale Show and me, Alex. If you still haven't, please hit follow at the top. That'll help me bring more of these visionaries to you. Thanks a lot. Stay awesome now. Back to the episode. how does it look like on an X-ray of a healthy, say, this 20-something-year-old person with healthy bones? What does it look like, the density and this microarchitecture?
Well, first of all, from an X-ray standpoint, everything which is a dense bone will be much white. Anything which is poor density will be more black. Okay, so from that perspective. So from an X-ray standpoint, we don't really see in greater details the microstructure of the bone. It's just like hypertransparencies on an X-ray. And if you're more black than white, that means, oh, there is a lack of density. And potentially you may see some trabecular pattern that if it's more black than white, we'll say, fewer trabecular bone compared to a healthy bone. Now, if you really go with a micro CT, meaning like a technology can be at the resolution of your bone, that will be different because in that case, you will be able to visualize the microstructure of your bone, meaning the trabeclet itself.
So like the scaffolds inside of the bone.
The scaffold, exactly. So the scaffold will be a good analogy. So obviously, if you have a good scaffold, you can stand on that and that will be okay. If you forget some of the things, it will collapse. So if you have a lot of trabecular bone, you will see dense network of bone, where if you have less, then you will see a lot of holes in that scaffold or like more heterogeneity of the bone with holes in the bone, which also demonstrate the degradation of the bone itself.
Could you also like a bit more detail explain like this density and the micro architecture? Because like to me, they are pretty similar. Like, you know, the density of the... Or did you ever, different techniques maybe?
Actually, it's two different things. Maybe give you the analogy of the Eiffel Tower. I already told you. The Eiffel Tower can be in metal, in wood, in plastic, in paper. So that's the density.
Ah, right.
Now the microstructure is how the metal bars in the middle are organized.
All right, yeah.
Think also as a Mikado. If you play Mikado, it's like a wood stick. It could be metal stick, it could be plastic, it's still Mikado. The density will be the fact it's a metal, the fact is wood, the fact is plastic. Now the structure is the mess that you will put when you just, you know, let it down on a table and try to move. That will be independent of the density, is the way the structure will fall on the table, and that the structure that will be more the microstructure, if you prefer, how it is connected together to hold it. And it's also very obvious, for example, from a stool bar, a bar stool, where you see you can stand high in a chair, but you always see small piece of bars holding the four legs of the chair. If you don't have that, what do you think will happen?
Right, yeah. Yeah, so the chair will basically fall.
It will collapse. Mm-hmm. Does it mean it's related to the density? No. If you wood or metal, it's still going to stand.
But if you remove,
very solid. Now, if you remove the little connectors, then it will collapse. It will not stand. It will collapse as soon as you will sit on it. That's the same with the bone. So the density is how strong is a bone in terms of condensation of, you know, like bone cells and stuff like that, where the structures, the microstructures, how they are connected together to hold the whole bone, so to speak.
So let's, you know, someone fell, because that's actually how people, they get to know that they have osteoporosis. They fall, they break a bone, and then there's an X-ray. What does the radiologist see on that X-ray?
Well, that's depend which bone you're going to fracture. But if the patient, first of all, you have to be careful that you can have osteoporotic fracture, is a bone fragility fracture, as it says, meaning that if you fall in the stairs and you break something, doesn't mean you have osteoporosis. Mm-hmm. You know, what we call fragility fracture is almost like a fracture from a standing height fall. Or something could be also be spontaneous, which is a bit more rare, but someone stand up and suddenly the bone collapse.
Okay.
That's really severe forms, but very traumatic as well. But if you have a fragility fracture, well, it depends where it goes, but you will most likely, if you see, for example, fracture at the vertebral fracture at the spine, you will see instead of to have a normal shape of the spine, you will have the shape of the spine been collapsing. So instead of to have, for example, a rectangle-like, if you prefer, then it will be half of the rectangle, or one of the wall of the rectangle will just go inside. So it would be cuneiform, or a different type of wedge fracture, or cuneiform fracture, a different type of fracture. And depending also the fragility can be something, you move your vertebrae from 4 centimeters to 2 centimeters.
I can imagine that. So it's extremely like painful, or
exactly.
Is it?
Mm. So, and that's what's happened sometimes when you see in elderly people, you see someone, people just completely bend.
Oh, yeah.
And because obviously is a sum of vertebrae that make you stand straight. But if you have one of the vertebrae that start to collapse in one place with a cuneiform shape, for example, it was create a triangle instead of to be a rectangle, then the body will start to bend in a direction of the triangle. So if you have more fracture, you start to, it's not possible for you to stand straight anymore, because every shape will just give you a bending, a curve that you follow. The problem with that, and we come back to a bit what we were seeing at the beginning, either for hip fracture or a spine fracture, you have about 20% of the people that will die within a year of the fracture in the elderly people.
Oh, that's fast.
Because, not because of the fracture, you say, you had a heart attack or whatever, but mostly it could be like sore infections, or it could be the consequence, because it's very shocking, but also infection. For example, for the spine fracture standpoint, if you start to bend completely because several fracture, a severe fracture, then when you bend more and more and more, you can't breathe normally anymore. And if you cannot breathe, the whole process, the physiological process of the body also is more subject to infection or more subject to other things and so on. And that the vicious cycle lead to a cascade consequences, comorbidities and so on. And most of the problem or most of the people who die is like from consequences, a cascade consequence of the fracture.
You mentioned the spine. What could be other, like the most fragile places in our skeleton?
Okay, there is many other places, but let's say when we talk about osteoarthritic fracture, we tend to split a bit major osteoarthritic fracture versus all the other fractures. The major osteoarthritic fracture are usually four type. One is hip fracture, which is very handicapping because the patient cannot really walk, or at a certain age, the consequence of surgery that's really creating a high level of mortality between 20 to 30, up to 40% within a year.
And this is what I actually heard about. So
yeah,
people are
hip fracture is the best, is the worst one. I would say the best. No, it's the worst one in terms of associated comorbidities and stuff like that with the spine. So those two are the big, big one. Now, so you get the spine, you get the hip, then you get humerus. That's really at the shoulder level, if we prefer, and the radius, which is the forearm.
Oh, wow.
The forearm is a bit more tricky because falling from a standing height, depending on the angle of the falls, even someone with fairly normal bone, if you have a overweight, for example, and you're falling, that's fairly traumatic fracture rather than fragility fracture. But clearly the other are really major osteoarthritic fracture. The radius, the forearm as well, but could be a bit more tricky, come at an early age to some extent. You can fracture ribs, fingers, some other bones, whatever, but that will be considered a osteoarthritic fracture, but not major osteoarthritic fracture.
And how can we, I mean, is there any way that we can know earlier, like before we break the bone, or like, is there any, I'm just thinking, you know, like, can we predict, or can, are there any like gen tests or like something fancy or something less fancy?
Well, there's two parts of it is try the prevention That's another topic. And the diagnoses somehow, and whether or not we can do something about everything. So just for the diagnostic as of today, as I mentioned to you, it's a multifactorial disease. So it's not that easy where you have one test that just make it 100% valid.
What does it look like now?
So as of today, the gold standard of the diagnostic is based on the density assessment, meaning usually after the age of 50, we tend to do a bone density test, meaning that we will estimate the density of your spine and the hip, that the two preferred sites for the diagnostic. And if they are below a certain threshold, we consider the patient is either or normal or osteopenic, which is a pre-osteopenic stage, or osteoporotic. So we have a specific definition based on the density.
We'll be right back. I want to say thank you for listening to this episode. If you find it interesting and feel particularly generous today, leave a review, hit this star rating. I'll be able to continue with the X-Health show for you. 3, 2, 1, and back to the episode. So we have this X-ray and we're looking at whether it's white or
so
black.
So it's not X-ray, it's what we call DXA, dual X-ray absorptiometry, because what we don't want the density of the mixed bone and soft tissue. You want the density of the bone itself. So in that case, you will just have the DXA or bone densitometer that will subtract the soft tissue, unlike pure X-ray single energy, you will extract the soft tissue. You will have only the density of the bone. So I remind you, I mentioned at the beginning of the interview that osteoporosis is defined as a decrease in bone mass and degradation of microarchitecture architecture, leading to a risk of fracture and so on. So this is a W definition of osteoporosis, or other we'll talk about bone strength, which is a mix of degradation of the quality, which related also to quantity and quality, density and structure somehow. So we know that it's multifactorial, it's like the two pillar, but still the gold standard till recently were the density only. So meaning it's imperfect, but better than nothing, where we can define the bone status of a person before it's too late.
What can be the problems with that? Like, we have only the density, we don't have this micro architecture.
Well, I mean, it's not a problem because it's already good, but since we need the two pillar of the osteoporosis, a density and structure, meaning that the test will be imperfect. And as of today, for example, the density, if we have patients that will be followed and that, for example, have major osteoporotic fracture, you have about 40% of the patient with major osteoporotic fracture were having the density in a non-osteoporotic zone, meaning that they were osteopenic, but yet they fracture. Why that? Because the microstructure was missing.
And we didn't see that. Or the
and we didn't see that because we were measuring only the density. And recently, that lead to another question, is the microstructure, how can I assess that? The microstructure will give you a different information than the density. So remember, the scaffold, the density will be metal or wood or whatever, while the structure will be how this bone will be connected to each other, so that not the bone but the interior of the bone will be connected, that make it solid or not solid. Because you can have the same density for two different person, but the underlying structure can be different. So that's a bit the analogy. If you have a density which is about the same for those two patients, the underlying structure can be different. This one will be more solid than this one. I don't know. It's a voice, so I cannot say, but I was playing a bit with the hands here. But it's important that the combination of the two will give a better estimate of the prediction of the future fracture. But not only. So I told you that osteoporosis can also be is multifactorial. So we talk about the major pillar of the density and the quality of the bone, the structure of the bone, but you also have all the other factors that will impact one way or another your level of risk to fracture. And what have been done very elegantly is some models that we call FRACS that have been developed by Professor John Canis and his team that will give the combination of different clinical risk factors combined also with probability of death, with the age, with the BMI. We have about 5, 6, 7 parameters, and now you have even more advanced version with more factors that will take some additional clinical factors that can weight in on the risk of fracture. And you will be able, it's called FRACS or FRACS Plus now with the newest version, by combining these different parameters together will give you a better understanding of what's going on and can better predict the fracture. So if I take in, for example, just the density and you say you have an accuracy of roughly 50, 60%, if you add the microstructure, so this is a major pillar, if you add the microstructure, you'll move from 50 to 60% to 70, 80% of accuracy, and you're adding the all the clinical risk factors, you'll be more even more precise. And that's quite important because as is a multifactorial disease, you need to take multiple parameters into account to have a better assessment of your risk.
So it doesn't have to be both the poor density and poor microarchitecture, or can there be options like, you know, good density, poor microarchitecture, good micro, bad micro?
Actually, you're absolutely right. It's a good question. It doesn't need to be both to fracture, but if you have both good, it's unlikely you will fracture, except you have all the risk factors. Okay. Now, if you have both are degraded and decreased density and degraded microstructure, your risk of fracture are really increased quite a lot. It's almost like immediate risk fracture risk that goes to the sky. Now, if you can have one over the others, it's balanced because you can have a nosoprotic patient based on density. So it's like you are low density, but the structure is still good. In that case, it could be the same level of risk with someone who have a better density, being osteopenic zone, but degraded structure. So you have a gradient of risk. It's not like black and white where you in or out of risk. It's a gradient, and the gradient will be weighted according to which part of the risk is more important. It's like more the density, more the structure, both, or maybe other factors. And other factors can be, as I said before, a disease state. It could be a treatment, it could be a lifestyle like alcohol, cigarette, and stuff like that. But we can even go even further. If we really have a holistic approach, we can even go to the level of muscles. Because if you have, you take a porcelain, can be very, very thin, thin one, whatever, can be extremely fragile. But if you leave that this in your hand and you don't drop it, it's not going to break. And that's the same with the body. If you have a good balance, if you have sufficient tonicity and muscle mass in your muscles, then that will help you not to fall. If you're fragile, you fall, you're most likely going to fracture. If you are good bone, you fall, you may be okay. If you're fragile but you don't fall, you're on the good side. But if you are fragile and you fall, that's a bad combination.
Right. Now, I am ready actually to ask you now about the Medibap solution to diagnose better. So the TBS Insight, what does it bring to the table? Like, how does it change the way we can diagnose osteoporosis?
Yeah, so the TBS stands for trabecular bone score, which an algorithm that we have developed, which allow based on the texture of the bone from an X-ray to the X-ray image, we estimated the microstructure of the bone by this index. That index being used what we call the experimental variogram. So see what that. Let's put it different words. The experimental variogram been used in geophysics for decades. Been used by NASA, some other space agencies, where you were able to analyze the soil from satellite image.
Okay.
Just to search for gas or petrol or some other things or a structure, or analyze the forest to see the health of the forest from a satellite image. You don't see the trees, so to speak, but you see how patchy or the holes, the clearings, and you see, well, that doesn't look very healthy versus this and this. So if you apply this concept, obviously with some extensive modifications, but you apply the concept to an X-ray image, a 2D X-ray image, is a bit like a satellite image of hers from a satellite, is like the radiologist looking at an X-ray image.
Okay, does it help? I mean, I guess it does help that you are a medical physicist, right? That you can correct. Bring that comparison, true. Which is like kind of, you know, you usually would not look out of the human body to look for something in the human body.
That's helped. And really the real father of the experimental rigor applied to the medicine the way we do with the TBS was unfortunately passed away, Laurent Potuo, then we work together in the second stand and we create that TBS. But the real idea was really from Laurent Potuo, who passed away at the age of 43, 44. So unfortunately.
Sorry to hear that.
He was a genius. He really got the great idea. And then we start to work together to really make it from an idea to a product and further develop the concept and we patented and so on. But the idea is really to, from a texture standpoint, because every 3D shape or bone or whatever, if you project in a 2D plan, that will create shadows. Gray level shadows.
Yeah, again, if we imagine just an X-ray, it easily
comes to mind.
It's a projection,
exactly.
Yeah.
And you see a zone of black point, you have a white point, a bit a gray point, and so on. But this is a reflection of what's happened in the 3D place. Okay? So what we do, we've been finding the mathematical relationship that can use this projection, even a low-resolution image, like poor-resolution image, where we can recognize certain pattern and holes in a structure. And if you have a lot of degradation in the bone, you will see, well, let's say the opposite. If you have a good bone, a good structured bone, you will see a lot of gray-level variation, but of a small amplitude.
What does it mean of a small amplitude?
Small amplitude, meaning the variation between pixel to pixel. Mm. There will be like a dark white, if I can say like a dense white versus a bit less white. Mm. Where if you have less bone, you will have less as a number of variation between pixels, but much greater amplitude, meaning white to deep black, because the absence of bones. So you can mathematically represent that one way or another. It's a reflection of what's happening at the microstructure level. And we did a lot of cadaver study and some others with a micro CT at 40 micron and so on. Actually, the TBS even bored on micro CT. But when we apply that to a 2D image, we're able to have an estimation as a surrogate of what's happening at the microstructure level, and we come with that index.
So what you're saying, you don't have a new X-ray machine?
And actually, that's the idea. Because we are good in medicine or where we're developing in adding new technology and so on. But, you know, it's like if you use a software, even Microsoft Word, just to take a most common one, most of it, I would say 99% of the people using Microsoft Word use only 10 or 20% of the capacity of the software.
No,
that's the same in everything. You know, even in cars and things, where a lot of features at the end, we use very few most of the time. So that's the same in medicine. At one point, working myself at the hospital, at one point, should we always add more technology, more technology, more technology? At the end, more technology mean more cost, more time, more resources,
more
you increase
resistance, more, I would say, from
and
the stuff.
At the end, resistance for adoption, that's another thing. We can come back on that if you want. But at the end, you add more technology. Why the society wants to have more in less time? So what about instead of adding another technology, optimizing a technology that we already have today? And that's the beauty of TBS, where we created a software that been plugged on the DEXA or bone densitometry or X-ray device that will use existing acquisition or on-the-fly acquisition to extract an additional information. So in other words, you have disruptive in the clinical outcome by adding a structure information that was not available before, but completely seamlessly integrated in the workflow, meaning that you don't add extra time, you don't add extra variation, but you improve the accuracy of the diagnostic quite significantly, moving an accuracy test from 50, 60 to 70, 80.
So if you
within a few seconds.
If you were to speak to a radiologist or like a hospital director, what would you say? Like, what do they have to do to implement that? And how would that improve? Because that's what they would be looking for, right? For the improvement of what they...
Yeah, I can be considered biased as one of the inventor of the TBS with Laurent. But for me, it's almost a no-brainer. In a sense that if you can improve, let's backward a little bit. When you know that the basic definition of osteoporosis relies mostly on density and microstructure, since 30 years, we know that, more than 30 years. We know that both are needed, yet the gold standard was density only because we didn't know how to do microstructure information without invasive technologies of bone biopsy or other things. But at the axial site of the bone, meaning spine and hip, we didn't know how to do that in a non-invasive manner or with a high level of radiation. Now we have a software that can sneak into your workflow, add only 3 seconds, so meaning nothing, not reiterating your patients, and you have a substantial additional piece of information that can help you to better predict the fracture and can help you to better make a decision maybe on type of treatment and so on and so on.
So the analysis takes 3 seconds.
Yeah, and transparent. You don't have to do anything except say yes when the pop-up is coming. So it's totally seamlessly integrated into the radiology workflow. Then for that, you improve quite significantly the outcome for the patients. Why would you not using it?
Oh, because it works, like what we do now.
Well, it doesn't work because we know that we miss 40 to 50% of the patient at risk.
I'm not even talking
about those who have not been referred. That's another question, the screening things, because as of today, 70% of people at risk never been even referred to a bone specialist or DXA for a diagnostic. So 70% of the people been missed because they never been sent to, so they just been, will be diagnosed when they would get a fracture down the road. But be careful, even if they get a fracture, you get fixed for the with the cast or whatever, the chance to refracture is being timed almost by 10 to have a second fracture and that becoming cascade issues, that even getting worse.
So you're quoting numbers here. I know there is like a number of studies behind it. Could you tell something about one of these studies?
That's a tricky one. If you go, for example, to IOF Osteoporosis Foundation, they will have a lot of statistics with plenty of epidemiological studies. So in Switzerland, we have the osteolos study, for example, we did in Achuve, Lausanne University Hospital. But all those studies that for which we've been working on, also the Manitoba study from Canada, that also another study.
Was a huge study, wasn't it?
Yeah, like, the Manitoba is probably the largest study that has been done in osteoporosis because as of today, there is more than 70,000 patients or whatever been followed for...
Oh, that's impressive.
Tens of years, like must be like more than 10 years for sure. Some of them is like 15 years or even more. But in average, maybe an average follow-up of 7, 8 years or 10 years, which is huge. And when you start to talk about several tens of thousands of patients, you start to have a very heavy, you start to learn a lot of things. Sometimes a bit too much. Because the more you follow them, the more the people we stay in the court, they are the most valid and healthy people, because the weak people somehow will pass away before the end of the study or the follow-up. And that's those who unfortunately pass away will almost give us more information to some extent. Why? But overall, when we have all these studies, everything I'm saying is population-based or evidence-based medicine. Is not like number throwing out of this. And even if we talk just for the TBS, for example, we have more than 1,500 peer review journals in medical journals that have been done independently around the world. and all the top groups in the world have been using TBS or been validating TBS, and that's why TBS now is part of the guidelines, fulfilling the WHO definition of osteoporosis by adding the structure to the density. So it's not to replace the density, that would be a stupid thing to do. It's just combining those two plus the clinical risk factors through FRAX or FRAX plus, which will be even better, just to have a better estimation of the risk of the patient. So if you know that within few seconds, by having more holistic approach of the disease, we know it's multifactorial, that you can have a better estimation where none of the tools take us individually are perfect, then why would you not do that?
That's a good question. So who are the first adopters? It's always like, you know, with new things, you know, people, especially in the hospitals, I mean, they are quite, conservative environments.
Yeah. As you know, also working at the hospital myself, so maybe I can say I'm one of the first adopters.
So sure that the University Hospital in Lausanne was one of the first ones.
Yeah, clearly. But I've been in the field for 30 years. I've been working in Lyon, been working in San Francisco at UCSF and so on. So I have an extensive network of key opinion leaders in the world of osteoporosis. I'm also a scientist, meaning that I tend to be like St. Thomas. I believe what I see. So I will not say it's work if I didn't test it. And I will, if I didn't test it myself. And we pretty much all the same.
Right.
And then they did something, but we do things differently and we want to test. So that's why the idea first of the TBS is not to sell it like crazy, is to have it tested by key opinion leaders from around the world.
Who will doubt it, right? Who will be curious?
They will, actually, frankly speaking, most of the KOL, they love QCT or fancy technique. They say, well, DJ, you're very nice. You know, I mean, saying that you can measure microstructure is not measuring the microstructure, but estimate the structure of the bone from a texture analysis, and that will really add some clinical value. Come on, let's be serious. Okay, well, test it. That's why I refuse any people who were asking money to test it. I say, no, I can provide you as a special KOL price or whatever, or you can play with that, but we're not going to pay for any validation because I feel that we're buying you to do that. And I feel that you should do it yourself and have the freedom to say whatever you feel about it.
Okay, so that's also a sneak into your business model. So you early started
so
selling
with Sterling,
it.
We kind of a place as a special price to as a very, very price, just really covering the cost of the shipping of Phantom, whatever, to calibrate the things and so on. But really to give the opportunity to key opinion leaders to play with it and then come out with result. And I remember one of the first one that been testing the prediction was Professor Bill Leslie from the Manitoba, from Canada, who 1 hour before midnight, the day of a deadline of a big conference, he gave me a call, say, DJ, you can do a happy dance. Say, why that? We've been testing and TBS is predicting fracture independently of the density and the clinical risk factors. Because if you're not predicting independently, that means you're measuring the same thing. So you want to have an additional contribution rather than a replacement contribution. So in other words, if you add the density, you add the structure, you improve the overall performance. Say, we have less than 1 hour to write an abstract and submit it to ISBMR,
also,
which is a
both
big thing. And then we wrote the abstract and we had the first prospective study on, at that time, 29,000 patients, which was at the time very huge. And then since then, we had individual level meta-analyses, we have treatment tested and so on. And frankly, it just came completely out of control. In a sense, people start to use it and so on, and they were making their own studies.
When was it? This conference that you're mentioning?
Oh, the first one was actually in 2011.
Okay.
And then that we really start to accelerate then with the creation, the merger of MedImap, Ascendis, and the software asset of 3D, D3 Medical to create MedImap Group. And then really start to accelerate with always, and maybe I'm not a business person for that, maybe I should say, for me is patient first, then my colleagues first, meaning if you create something which is great for the patient, but it is too disruptive for my colleagues, the medical adoption will be very poor. Mm-hmm. So you have to think about them before launching a product. But you don't only want to think about them, you also want to think about the patient. You can work on solution to optimize the workflow for the colleagues. That's one thing. That's very common in AI products. But as at the product incoming myself, co-managing the Center of Bone Disease in Lausanne University Hospital with Professor Olivier Lamy, it's important for me we start from a clinical gap, from the patients.
Was there anything, any event or any particular patient or
that triggered the
idea? Yes.
Well, when you work in medicine and we know the definition, that we know the gold standard solely based on densities, like the wheel of the bicycle. You can do on one, but it's less comfortable than two. And you feel that you did a good diagnostic to the patients, and the patient come to see you again and say, I'm sorry, doctor, I fractured.
Oh.
And it's painful. And you say, oh, okay. I say, yeah.
But you say
the image was okay. It's the same frustration that some of the cardiac issue go to see the doctor for a check and say, oh, your heart is fine. Oh, thank you. I'm so happy. Boom, die. Mm-hmm. On the way out. It's frustrating. At the end, the idea of medicine is to be the most accurate as possible to improve the life of the patients, especially with the aging of the population. So the aging of the population, we're all happy because now instead of to die at the age of 65, you die at 85. See, that's great. But what is even better is a healthy aging. Because if you die at 90, 100, whatever, but you can't do anything and whatever, is it worth it? Is it worth it only if you can really enjoy life to the end in a better condition? And that the duty of doctors to say, okay, can we do our utmost to really try to do that? Can we set up some good lifetime style and start to improve a lot of things and so on? So at the end, with the aging population, the projection for fragility, fracture and so on will be even worse. Can we intervene before it's too late so that we can have a healthy aging? That's important. So for me, it's important to work toward healthy aging pathway so that the healthy aging pathway is osteoporosis, but can be other disease, of course. But if we can, with our little thing, contribute to a healthy, bone healthy pathway, at least we are already fulfill or sermon of Hippocrates for some doctors or whatever, or the way that we want to do that, because we can see that, you know, personal surrounding, that fracture can be really cumbersome and damageable. So you don't want that.
Okay, so I can understand, like, now with the TBS Insight, you can actually have a better diagnosis because you can see both the density and the microarchitecture.
Correct.
Now, can you predict osteoporosis?
Yeah.
Or can you... Oh, okay.
Actually, we will have there is two things. When you combine those two, and it will give you the current status and say, you're bad or you're not bad, or be careful. But this is also a predictor of the osteoporosis or the fracture. Okay. So the idea is to predict before it occurs, obviously. So if you have a fracture and you do that exam, well, you know what the status, and potentially you can choose the type of treatment that can consolidate the density and the structure. So that's already good at this stage. But the idea is to do that test before it occurred, because you're in a certain level of risk because of clinical risk factor, or I'm a heavy smoker, or I'm menopausic, or I have this, or I have my mother fractured the hip,
family
or
history.
Family history of fracture, stuff like that. You say, there is few flags that should trigger the curiosity to know what's going on with your bone at this stage, and at least create a baseline.
At what age?
Well, usually, so there are different guidelines, depending on the country. Definitely above 65 for sure. But starting, if you have other clinical risk factors, then 50 is a good age. If you really have a lot of clinical risk factors, you take, anti-aromatase, or you take other cortisone and blah, 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 and you're already like at a younger age, you may want to check your status at least to monitor. So DXA is very literally a radiation. You spend 2 weeks in the mountains, that will be similar type of radiation. Or if you do a transatlantic flight from Geneva to Washington, for example, or New York, radiation, natural radiation will be similar to a DXA. So radiation is not an excuse for not being diagnosed or test your bone. We can also go to screening with clinical risk factors, questions, stuff like that. Of course, you can even do self-assessment yourself from a clinical standpoint. There's many different things. Or you can use also opportunistic screening, but that's a different topic that for future product that we're currently developing.
So what's the risk you can see on TBS Insight?
A risk as what?
Like if you have that screening, and then how would TBS Insight say?
The probability of fracture or the increased risk of fracture. For example, every time you decrease your structure or the density, that's the same for density, you increase your density by 10%, for example, you double your risk to have a fracture.
What will the radiologist see software?
From the software, it will have from the TBS or density, that will be a bit similar. It will have a number. It will have a reference curve to see where you situate yourself compared to normal reference curve population. Say, are you in the same range that the normal population or you are below? And then we have a different score that can be used for the density. We call that the T-score. So it's just the T-score is just tell you how much you have lost density compared to the peak bone mass that you reach at the age of 20, 25, 30. Okay? So it's almost like the bank account in Switzerland with when you get retired, you save some money, and as you start to dig into it, that's the same. That's the peak bone mass, and then you tap into your account.
Does it differ between men and women, this peak bone mass?
It may. Men tend to be slightly higher than that in women, from genetic standpoint and maybe slightly above, but not that much. Mm. At the end, what will differ is the speed at which you will lose because of the menopause that will accelerate the speed. Now, having said that, men tend to have maybe less healthy hairstyle like that woman. So at the end, we'll make it up. And the proportion of people dying then from the fracture tend to be higher in men than in women.
Because they would take care of themselves. I mean,
women will be better. And, you know, men, we are more fragile. When we have like a scare, we think we're going to die. We're not very courageous when it comes to health compared to women. That's why we're not giving birth. Right. We won't be able to stand that. So from a general perspective, it affects more women because of osteoporosis, but it's also affecting men, and men will be potentially more affected for secondary cause or comorbidities in dying and stuff like that down the road.
So obviously TBS Insight is a diagnostic tool, right?
But it's a helpful diagnostic where you never use it alone. You combine the results that been on the report with the density, which also be given the same report that the TBS, but this will also be integrated in different parameter that we call, for example, the BMDT score is a gold standard with a certain threshold to define osteoporosis. So we will provide an adjustment of this BMDT score by the structure of the bone. So that means it's a score that will take into account the density and the structure to give a novel score, whether or not you're most likely osteoporotic or not, and so on. But we will also, since our TBS structure had an independent contributor of the fracture risk, it had been integrated into the FRAX and FRAX Plus, meaning which is a FRAX, is a probability of fracture at 10 years.
Oh, wow, that's
so
okay.
The TBS is integrated into that FRAX score, and that means the FRAX score will give you an estimation of your probability or likelihood to fracture within the next at 10 years. And if you have 30 or 40% or 50%, you say a high risk of fracture. So you have some time now. It's time to act, and you'd better take action to avoid that it's happening.
This is what I wanted to ask. Like, what can you do really?
Well, depend the age of the patient, obviously. If you start to worry about it when it's too late, you can still act. If you already have the fracture, you can avoid the second fracture, which is already good. So we have a lot of treatment that exists. But the strength of the treatment will depend on the status of the bone. Some of them will be more what we call anabolic. And the anabolic is to try to rebuild bone where it's really damaged. But you only give that with a very high risk of fracture when you already have a fracture to avoid the second fracture, because the effect is very powerful. But you may have some side effects. So you do that only when you really damage. So you don't want to use a bazooka to kill a fly. Okay, so you will have to adapt. So some of the treatment will be more upstream, meaning that you already have a degradation, but you want to avoid that it's further degrading. So you either slowing down the loss or you improve the density by increasing the density compared to those who are not increased compared to baseline. So in other words, you will mitigate the risk by strengthening either the density or density and structure, depending on the type of treatment, because not all treatment improves the structure of the bone, but most of the treatment at least improves the density. So ideally, you can start to see if you have a different profile for a given patient. And that's to start to go to a personalized like medicine, where you start to take the profile of a given patient. If you have a degradation of the density, you treat with treatment. If you have a higher degree of degradation bone density and structure, you may give a different type of treatment that a bit stronger. And if you're really low with a fracture, it'd be another type of treatment. So according to the profile of risk of the patient, you will select the most appropriate treatment to react.
And if you're just osteopenic?
Yeah. So if you're osteopenic, you will work on prophylactic measures, meaning that could be the basic one is calcium, vitamin D. Obviously, if you have to maintain the bone, you have to make sure you have the raw material that necessary to build it and fix it, which is the calcium and the vitamin D, which is also good for many other things, but at least there's some basics. So if you have the basics, then that's also lifestyle. You should just be giving vitamin D, calcium, vitamin D, even you, myself, son, and I actually I do regularly.
People,
we should be careful of that for other things. So that's one way of doing it. But you also have to the lifestyle. So that means if you're a heavy smoker or a heavy drinker or whatever, then that's damageable. Alcohol is an interesting one, for example. Alcohol is a huge risk, meaning is not completely wrong, is not completely right. In a sense that if you're not abusing and you have a tiny bit, why not? You know, there's a lot of debate about some good wine that could be good for cardiovascular. That's the same for pretty much everything. In excess is becoming toxic. In excess, for example, for drinking is more than 3 units. Is because you have a U-shaped curve of the risk that it could be protected, could be good for certain things, but if you go certain, it's becoming toxic.
And you're speaking as 3 units, I think, for an 80-kilo man, because for me, it's like already too much.
Yeah, of course, it's already like damageable. So that means you have to be far below. And again, not every day. So we have to be extremely cautious. Because saying that, it's almost implied that, oh, if you could take one, it's okay. You can do that every day. I will clearly not recommend that at all. There is some other effect. But once in a while, you can pretty much eat everything. Once in a while, it's fine. That it's becoming too much or becoming an habit. That's where it starts to be a bit toxic, whatever you take. But lifestyle, cigarettes, if someone's, you know, have one cigarette in a while, you know, it's not good for health, but it's not going to kill you completely. Now, if you have one packet or 2 packets per day, obviously the impact will be a disaster, not only for the bone, but you will die from something else before the bone. That's for sure. So the lifestyle is also part exercise. Exercise, because I told you, if you have a good balance, you will less falls, you decrease your likelihood of falls, you maintain the muscle, you maintain your skeletal, you stand, you don't fall, you have less risk. Moreover, what we call impact loading exercise, so where you're loading yourself with your own weight. For example, if you swim, it's good for muscle, a lot of things, but it doesn't carry your weight because the waters do that for you.
So it's not good for the bones.
Well, it's good for the bone indirectly through the muscle activity, but not for direct impact on the bone. And direct impact on the bone will use a piezoelectric-like effect that can stimulate the bone formation and maintain the bone in a good health. Well, at least it slows down the loss and it will just contribute to a healthy living. Okay? So all these things can be calcium, vitamin D, healthy lifestyle, good balance with calcium, vitamin D in the food, stuff like that, just not just supplement, but also a good lifestyle. Exercise will be already good factors to play with to really avoid the speeding of the bone loss from a density and structure standpoint.
And actually, what can be kind of counterintuitive, going to the gym can help this bone density. As like I had before a bone organoid, a scientist, so giant Nuttall Shadley here on the show, and he was actually taking his cells, you know, to the gym. I mean, you know, just quotation marks here, just to give them some kind of this impact, you know, that we could actually do in real life in the gym. And so it's not like you should avoid exercise because
quite
you can
the
fall.
Opposite. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a counterintuitive because that's always, so obviously, you have to choose and select the type and just secure yourself in what you're doing, you know, but it's sometimes a counterintuitive things in medicine in a sense that, I'm fragile, so I don't want to go out anymore.
Right.
Okay, what will happen? The muscle mass will be less stimulated. So your muscle mass will melt. So you will go toward what we will call sarcopenia. So if you have less muscle mass, you're most likely going to fall. If you don't do exercise, you will increase your likelihood to fall. And you say, oh, I don't do anything. Okay, well, that's what a boring life then. If you, you know, unfortunately, well, I'm not quite sure I want to go there today. But the issue sometimes, we should embrace our fears to make it disappear. And if we embrace our fear, then you will live better, generally speaking. And if we feel that, okay, I have a bit more fragile bone, so I have to be careful, then I don't want to go out anymore. That's some protective measure, but it's a countermeasure that is not that good at all. It's like a counterintuitive, but will do the opposite. Obviously, when you say, okay, I'm fragile, okay, I'm going to do a base jump and I'm going to do plenty of things and why not? But then you'll know the risk. Mm-hmm. But at least maintaining a normal physical activity is important, not only, by the way, for the bone, but for the mind, for the rest. And as I told you before, a lot of people will decide from a hip fracture, for example, for comorbidities, consequence of. And some of the consequences can be shocking. Say, I cannot move anymore. I stay on my chair, don't do anything. And then the mind will take the rest and infection and this and this and this. And at the end, you will die because you were afraid to leave.
Okay, that's heavy. Well, let me just ask now. Well, TBS Insight is already on the market, right?
It is reimbursed in several countries, and the biggest one obviously being a reimbursement CPT code level 1, which is reimbursed by the basic insurance in US. And it's an independent code that works also for TBS based on DXA, X-ray, or projected CT image and stuff like that, because it just provides information independent of the density. It can work outside the density or suppose field for, as I say, orthopedic applications, some other things. But the level of reimbursement is really correct. And it just rendered justice to the effort and the added value it has clinically that had been in the level 1 and been recognized. And as of today, is really spread throughout the United States and quite heavily used, and more to come, obviously, in the coming years, I hope.
How do you want to develop it? I know you want to develop it. Like
it's never finished. I mean, you know, when you're a scientist in a healthcare domain, it's a never end story. When you're driven by passion and for the benefit of the patient, you always have ideas. You can always improve. And the more you dig, the more you find things you can improve to do it. And you try to, you know, it's like perfection is never rich. It's an unreachable target. Perfection doesn't exist. It's a concept that doesn't exist. It's a concept you can tend to, but never reach. And it would be very boring if you reach it, by the way. But so it just is a driving force to say, let's try to improve even further. Can we do it better? We can always do better. Those who say we cannot do better, that the lack of vision or maybe of passion, because we never stop. And that's the evolution of the world. We can always do better. But better can be the enemy of good also. So we also have to be careful not to be, okay, is it worth the maybe 10% missing? Is it worth the effort? Or should we just look at in a different manner and maybe go in another area where we can improve things better? And at one point, we have to recognize that it's not perfect, but sufficient, because the added value of the 5 or 10% missing is not worth the mobilization of 100 brains just to make it better. Why these brains can be focused on something where we have a huge gap and we can move the needle more substantially for the doctors and for the patients. And that's where we're going with MediMaps and with new product. We obviously start to improve further the current products with the TBS. And we're going to release in a couple of months a new version, which is an improved version, taking into account the morphotype of the patient, just to take into account what's happened and so on, to try to improve even further the accuracy, which is quite good because we don't stop on the given product. We keep thinking of improving things, but we're mostly thinking, okay, we improve the diagnostic and potentially the prediction. But what's annoying me from the hospital standpoint, where we know that 70% of people at risk never been referred for diagnostic, we know that we have one major aortic fracture every 3 seconds in the world. So a lot of fractures since we started podcast. And we know that the cost of the society is about $124 billion per year. Why we know that we can improve it by diagnostic, screening, treatment, and so on, why we're not doing things correctly. So we've been doing a piece from a diagnostic standpoint and prediction standpoint. I would like us to work upstream and downstream, meaning that, okay, have to admit, and the first one, even being in medical field, sometimes forget to do, oh, I have a certain age, I should do the screening for this and this and this and this. Yeah, I would do that sometime. Not now, I'm overwhelmed and I don't have time.
Let's just put it on a list.
Let's put that on a to-do list. And 10 years after, oh gosh, I still have to do that, or sometimes too late. So the idea is, okay, can we tackle part at least of the 70%. And that's why we are launching toward the end of the year or next year, our opportunistic screening approach, also using TBS, but also AI algorithm that will really combine different things. So we just patented that. So it's just like moving toward that, where in an opportunistic manner, someone just stopped by an X-ray or a radiologist for no reason because of fracture or pain or whatever.
Or like a snowboard injury?
For example, but although that's fairly traumatic, but just like in an opportunistic manner, then you go to the radiologist for an X-ray, and then we're going to use those images being acquired to opportunistically screen and flag those patients who are most likely be at a very high risk or at least be a high risk of bone fragility index-like things.
Because you already have enough data to predict that or to feed AI with that.
Exactly. Well, as of today, we already have a library of 30,000 images and stuff like that. So we have enough, and then we're working on that. And actually, we've been selected as an oral presentation at the European Congress of Radiology, presenting the first result of this, of our prototype. So the idea is to really, what I will call the upstream strategy or like a butterfly strategy, in a sense that the diagnostic is a node, or bow tie approach is a node of the bow tie, and the upstream is let's try to use an opportunity screening just to move forwards and just be able to flag patient at high risk that should be referred to a bone specialist for full diagnostic with the X-ray, clinical risk factors and stuff like that. The second is really on the orthopedic side. It's assuming that you have fracture ready. So that's a downstream. The other side of the bow tied is, okay, assuming that you've been screened or you didn't, you have been diagnosed or you didn't, and unfortunately, you get a fracture because you didn't have that before, for example. Then it's important also to select the best implant for a given patient as a given bone status. You know, I like the comparison with a Sunday handyman. You want to do hole in a, you know, a hole in a wall. And okay, I want to put my picture there. Okay, I have to do a hole. I have to put the right, you know,
screw inside
and so on. But if it's full material, if it's placoplast or like empty wood or whatever, you will have to choose what it is. So that the idea is just to give the mean to the orthopedic to say, okay, well, we'll give you the information about the microstructure from a simple X-ray. And you tell you, well, that's what you will expect and not discover that when you do the surgery and then be able to select, maybe help them selecting the most appropriate approach for given bone status.
Does it also mean that we could move this diagnosis even before this osteopathic period or like this moment? So, I don't know, into the people's 30s or 40s?
Well, you can have somehow because in a 30s, as I said before, you will reach a peak bone mass. So how much money did you save for retirement?
Mm-hmm.
If you save a lot of money and then you live normally, right, you will have enough to the end of the life.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't save enough, you'd be in trouble after 10 years.
Okay.
So the bone is the same. How did you capitalize your bone when you were younger? By doing exercise. If you spend the whole day long playing video game and blah, 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 and no exercise, no healthy food and so on, that will be detrimental to the maximum peak bone mass, besides genetic or disease, of course. But if you optimize, if you are poor in calcium, vitamin D, poor food, nutrition, if you don't do exercise and so on, that will have impact, not now, but later in life, and that might be too late. So it's already important to have a healthy life and exercise and so on to maximize your capital, so peak bone mass. Then obviously, the more we go, the more we're collecting data, the more artificial intelligence can help us to understand all the interconnections. And the ideal world where we would like to see at least even us to go at one point from a health perspective, for bone health perspective, if the accumulation of data we can start to see is to predict the trajectory of a given person. And I would almost like to go to an app for the patient to see if I doing that often or whatever, how that will change my trajectory towards healthy or toward the fracture or toward other potential issues. So if you start to accumulate enough data, you can almost predict that trajectory and you can also see what have a good impact on it or what have a bad impact on that. And then that will be a tremendous amount of data. Insurance can work on that, some others, or big epidemiological studies and, you know, accumulation of study and so on. But at the end, the amount of data is becoming so big that from a normal brain or simple calculation, you will not be able to see all the interaction. And that's where, for example, AI can be, one of the application of AI will be to find patterns in those tetra, amount of data and
Okay, Didier, so thank you very much for this like hyper interesting conversation about the bone health and, you know, the osteoporosis diagnosis. And I mean, for you guys listening, if you're before 30, you better work on that money in the bone bank.
You have to put money in the bone bank.
Right. And if you're over 30, well, you better go to that gym and help
maintain,
not to lose.
So we tend to, we increase, capitalize, try to maintain the most as we can in a natural manner. And then after we have treatment just to overcome this deficit one way or another, up to the final stage where we have good prostheses, just to make it up if you survived the operation and the complications at the very late stage.
Right.
But no, there is a lot of things to be done as long as you, it's like everything. The earlier you detect it, the better it is. For osteoporosis, obviously 20 years doesn't make sense. Just a lifetime is enough to do things and so on in case of secondary disease. But at the age of 50 and above, you should really start to consider checking your bone status to avoid the first fracture, because the second one is more hurtful.
So again, thank you very much for the conversation. And guys, if you want to check this TBS insight, you may go to medimapsgroup.com. And I guess, you know, there you'll also learn, as soon as the AI-powered new tool is launched, there'll also be news about that.
Correct, correct. Few news already on the website about that, since we presented as prototype at some worldwide conference. So yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm totally impressed by the audacity of researchers turned startup founders, doctors turned entrepreneurs, or ordinary parents turned healthcare innovators. People battling the battles that no one fought before for the extra health of the future. So if you see a startup posting on LinkedIn, show them some love, hit like, comment, that's fabulous. If you have a couple drops more of that altruism, follow the Exhale Show. Leave a review here. I'll be able to bring more of these visionaries to you. So a big thank you. You're awesome. See you next week.
The information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered medical advice. If you have any medical questions, please consult your healthcare practitioner. The opinions on the show are Alex's or her guests. The podcast does not make any responsibility or warranties about guest statements or credibility. While the podcast makes every effort to ensure that the information shared is accurate, please let us know if you have any comments, suggestions, or corrections.